All right, this is going to be part two of our interview with Conan. We got into a whole lot of other stuff, and then we get into some more business stuff with Conan here. The interview went on for so long that we had to kind of chop it in half and then, you know, bring it back. So hope you guys enjoyed the first half. Spread it around, share the love, and let's get into this part two with Conan. Yeah, we're talking about all this San Diego talent. Do you remember when Rey Mysterio came out and did that song with POD?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what was your thoughts on that?
You were good friends with POD. I think you grew up with them or something, no?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was awesome little collaboration, because I think you're probably the one that got them together, right?
Yeah. No? Yeah. I just thought it had to make sense.
That was definitely cool to see. You know what is even more cool is there was one time when it was like POD, Rey Mysterio, and Mad One, and they were all in WWE.
Yeah, that was a WrestleMania. I don't even remember which one that was, but it was probably like,
yeah, that was sick.
6-7 years ago. Yeah, man, that was crazy. You know, going back to some of the stuff that you're doing now with Lucha Underground, is there anything that you can kind of tell us about what's going on there?
No, Lucha Underground is really something that, you know, probably around 20 years ago, me and the founder of AAA, Antonio Pena, we wanted to do, you know, a wrestling show, but there were really no, you know, there were no takers, because most of the investors that had money were like Anglos, and they were like, was Hulk Hogan in it? And we were like, no, it's Lucha Libre. So they didn't even know what Lucha was. So it's hard to get any, you know, inversionistas, if you will. And so, you know, now they got some Latin, you know, people that are funding it. And, you know, basically I think it's really, it's got a humongous cult following. You know, it's a wrestling, but it's shot like a TV show. You know, and it's episodic, because it isn't year round like WWE. It's so many episodes that ends, and then you got to wait for a new season. So it's kind of like finally somebody put a twist on it. And, you know, I was in the first season. I wasn't in the second season or the third, but I was in the first season, you know. I had a lot of really good scenes with the Spanish actor called I forgot his real name, but in the series he's Dario Cueto, and he steals every scene he's in.
Oh yeah, he's great, man. Are you still involved in Lucha Underground behind the scenes, or is it just something?
No. Yeah. I just want to do my own projects. You know, like I said, you know, the writers there, I have nothing against them, but they're all white. None of them speak Spanish, you know, and I just want to do something with more of a Latino influence and contribution.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? You're not the first one that has mentioned that to me. And you know, it's been brought even like when, before it even started taping, like, some other people that were also supposed to be involved in behind the scenes, they were like, yeah, man, you know, we're supposed to be involved, but most of the writers are all, you know, white. So how do you tell the Latino Mexican culture about what they do when you don't really fully get it, you know? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, basically most people, unless they're hardcore fans, they don't know who writes the show. So most people don't even know. You know, you got to be like a hardcore fan, which is the minority. And I don't think they have enough, unless they really want to get proactive and, you know, write the company about it. But most people aren't going to get that proactive, because the show's really good. You know, the talent is incredible. I recommend it, about half of it, but the talent is incredible. The production is incredible. But like I said, there are some things, like, I'll give you an example. As you know, in wrestling, the biggest match that there is in Mexican wrestling is mask versus mask.
Yeah.
And guys sometimes build up years for a mask versus mask match to happen. What happens in that match is two guys go in there that have a mask, and whoever loses his mask forever. He can never put it back on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's like the biggest victory you can have. There's hair versus hair matches, which obviously whoever loses, loses their hair, you know, and then they have like hair versus mask match. And so, you know, they did a show once with no buildup, nothing, just in that same show, they had a mask versus mask match, and it was a girl against a guy. And, you know, it had no buildup, it had no interest. And when the girl actually beat the guy, people were like, they didn't care because they weren't emotionally invested.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, they're just like breaking with one of the biggest lucha traditions that there is. You know, they didn't even take care of something as sacred as the mask. They made it seem like it was nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and those type of things a Latino wouldn't have done.
Yeah. That's crazy. You know, and speaking of, you were there, well, actually both times, but you were there when Ray lost his mask in WCW. And also when he lost it down in TJ, and the audience down in TJ was a little more kind of butthurt when he lost it in WCW. Can you talk about that at all?
Well, they diluted it. You know, the problem is that they had Rey Mysterio against Kevin Nash, who, for those of you that don't know, is like 7 foot tall, and he was a big star, and everybody knew that. In the pecking order, or in the wrestling food chain of WCW, Nash is not going to lose to Mysterio. But if it wasn't bad enough, it wasn't even Ray versus Nash. It was me and Ray. Listen to this match. Me and Ray against Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. You know, Razor Ramon?
Yeah.
Scott Hall. And if Ray lost, Miss Elizabeth, who was a valet, she wasn't even in the match, she would shave her hair. People knew she wasn't going to shave her hair. And, you know, I told the owner at that time, Eric Bischoff, I go, look, why don't you have a match between Juventud Guerrero and Rey Mysterio? They're about the same age. They're both second-generation wrestlers. They're going to put on an incredible match, and they actually have a history. No. We're going to take it off. You know, we're going to take it off the way I want to take it off. And, you know, Rey was thinking of not even going to the match. And they actually called them up, and they were like, yeah, if you don't show up, you know, it's breach of contract. And as a matter of fact, before that match, he was supposed to lose it against Eddie Guerrero. In one of the greatest matches I've ever seen in my life, it was Ray against Eddie. It was Halloween Havoc, maybe 1998 or 1997. So you can check it out on YouTube. Ray was dressed as like the Phantom. That match was incredible. Well, that match, Eddie was supposed to take Ray's mask. And Eddie knew how much the mask meant, you know, being a Mexican. And he actually told Ray, if you want, I won't wrestle today, you know? And Ray goes, I don't want no more problems. Let's just do the match. 5 minutes before they went in the ring, they go, no, we're not losing your mask. And they did it even worse. I would rather have him lost it to Eddie, of course.
Yeah,
but
wow.
He had a match where, yeah, it was really diluted. And the thing is that Ray, as you know, he is without a doubt one of the most humblest, kindest human beings there is. He doesn't like controversy.
Yeah.
He isn't a guy that really... You know, and so they really took advantage of him there, and there wasn't much he could do anyways.
Yeah. But, you know, that opened up a whole other kind of a whole new crew, a whole new faction that you had actually started as well with the Filthy Animals.
Right. Well, the Filthy Animals is actually a word that was coined by another wrestler called Disco Inferno. And it was because, like, me and Ray and a bunch of other wrestlers, we'd go out and we'd party and we'd come back really late, you know, with club clothes on, you know, and he and Disco would actually see us and go, oh, what a bunch of filthy animals. And so what I did is I they weren't doing nothing with Disco. They weren't doing nothing with Juventud or me or Tori Wilson or Billy Kidman or Eddie Guerrero. So I actually went to the writing team and I said, look, since you're not going to do nothing with any of us, look at all the talent I just named. I go, since you're not going to do anything with us, I go, just put us in a group together and just do nothing with all of us as a group, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they put us in this group called the Filthy Animals, and we actually did a lot of funny stuff, and it got over. It actually got over.
Yeah. How was it being in the other faction? You were part of one of the biggest factions in wrestling history with NWO. And, you know, members of the clique.
Right.
How did that go down?
Well, the NWO, of course, was, you know, that's what really, you know, at that time, that's what was really helping WCW beat WWE for the first time in history in the ratings. but they just kept adding more and more and more people. So Kevin Nash wanted to have his own group called the Wolf Pack. And imagine this, it was Macho Man Randy Savage, a legend, Lex Luger, a superstar legend, Sting, legend, you know, Kevin Nash, humongous superstar at that time, now a legend. And I was in that group, you know, I was like the youngest one and the least known, but that's kind of what helped me, because that's when I was really like getting on the microphone and really being able to show my character, my personality. So that was a humongous boost for my career. And it was like a rock star, bro. You know, you went, whether it was Seattle or Denver or whoever you went, the arenas were full. There were groupies everywhere. There was parties everywhere. It was like, did you ever see the movie Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
That's what WCW was like. Every night. It was just incredibly out of hand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I spent a couple of wild nights with the... On the road.
Then you know.
Yeah, on the road with WCW. It was next level. It was next level. Being part of NWO, would you say, did that change things backstage with the way that some of the other wrestlers looked at you?
Because they saw that, they saw, for example, I had a shirt that was that's like one of the best ways to gauge your popularity. One is, you know, your ratings. When you're on the air, does the rating go up? Do people turn off the channel? That's one. Another one is merchandising. And I had these shirts called Straight Up G's. That's what it was called. And, bro, they were selling like hotcakes. You know, it was my shirt. It wasn't a Wolfpack or NWO shirt. So, you know, I was getting some respect because I was making money for the company, you know. Yeah. And so... But there was definitely, a lot of racism in that company, without a doubt.
And being on that level, even just like like being with WWE right now, for example, how is it some of these wrestlers make money, aside from the contract? I mean, do they get to do these appearances, merchandising, the video games, TV, TV shows, movies, any of that? How does that work?
Right. Well, yeah, they have different ways of them making money. You know, if you're like all the big shows that are on pay-per-view, you know, WrestleMania or SummerSlam, whatever, you get a cut of that pay-per-view money if you're on the show. If you're on a video game, you get money off those video games. If, you know, if you're selling shirts, you're getting money off those shirts. You know, there's a lot of ways to make money, but not everybody has a t-shirt. Not everybody's in a video game. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, they're in backstage and like anything else, you know, for every guy in baseball that's making $18 million, there's a whole bunch that are in AAA making $25,000. Yeah. And in WWE, you got a lot of guys making a little bit of money and a few guys making a lot of money.
Yeah. At what point you were one of those guys that was making a whole lot of money with WCW, and you kind of you kind of helped change the game on how the contracts worked. How has the game changed, like as far as the industry goes on how the contracts work, how they worked back then and how they work now?
Well, back then, they hardly didn't guarantee you anything. They just guaranteed, okay, you know, you can't work anywhere else. You know, what they do is they sign these contracts that are very one-sided. And I've signed them because I needed work, and so does everybody else. But they classify you as an independent contractor so they don't have to pay overtime or workman's compensation or stuff like that, you know. But you're not an independent contractor, because if I was an independent contractor, that means I could work anywhere I want, you know, just like a plumber who comes to your house. You can't tell them, hey, don't go fix the neighbor's, you know, plumbing because you don't like them. They're like, well, I'm going to work wherever I want, you know. So they treat you like an employee, but they classify you as an independent contractor so they don't have to pay you pension, you know, and stuff like that.
Wow.
It's very exploitative.
Yeah. And then even
Mexico's
then
goes even worse.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Even then, like some of the wrestlers that you brought over to cross over, like Psicosis and La Parca. Some of these guys, they try to go back to Mexico, and then their name is taken. How does that work when they try to come back to their own hometown and they can't work under the name?
Well, what happened was is La Parca, right? You know, there's the thing is that like La Parca and Psicosis, those are names that were given to them by AAA. But they gave that name life. If they weren't any good, they would have kicked them out and put somebody else under the name.
Yeah.
But what companies do, because most wrestlers, they just want to wrestle, bro. They don't know about finances and registering your name and copyrights, and they don't know about none of that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're just making money for the first time in your life. You're trying to save it. You're trying to, you know. And so, you know, AAA would go and register the names in their name, you know. Yeah. We own this name. You know, they wouldn't share it with the wrestler. So when Parca left, they just kept the name and gave it to somebody else. You know, when Psicosis left, they took the name and gave it to somebody else, you know, even though really the person that, you know, had to go in there and make the name famous and put in the, you know, the time and the effort to make that name popular and go on the roads and wrestle, you know, hurt and everything that a wrestler goes through, leaving his family, you know, behind, not seeing him, you know, on their kid's birthday and on special occasions, you know. And, you know, now a lot of wrestlers are a little bit more savvy. They learn from our generation. They're like, you know what, the name is both of ours, or I'm going to register the name and I'll lend it to you, you know. But not every wrestler is that savvy. And so they'll still take advantage of you. If you have step, they'll copyright that name, and when you turn around, it ain't yours.
Yeah, and I know. I went to a match this past weekend here in San Diego, in South San Diego, and Rey Mysterio came out and wrestled Psicosis, but it wasn't what I think some of the fans were expecting. So when Psicosis came out, some of the fans started yelling, you know, Nicho, Nicho. And so, and that wrestler Psicosis was upset, and he grabbed the mic and he was saying how, you know, it's kind of disrespectful that, you know, he is Psicosis and this whole thing and whatever. And then when Rey Mysterio came out, you know, and I think they were expecting Rey Mysterio 619. And, you know, I think just the whole kind of mix up with the name, with the names, it kind of throws people off. What's your thoughts on that? What's your take?
Well, that's, you know, that's, first of all, you shouldn't be mad because the original Psicosis is Nicho.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, the guy from Tijuana, this guy is some guy from Puebla who isn't even half good as Nicho. And he was just lucky that Nicho left to WCW and they gave him that name.
Yeah.
And the name isn't even his. It's AAA's. And he just used it in the United States because I think AAA maybe didn't register it in the United States. And maybe he did. I don't know. I don't know how he keeps using the name, but he does. And so then the thing with Rey Mysterio is there's like about three Rey Mysterios. One is actually the son of the uncle. The other one might be like a nephew, and the other guy's just some guy he knows. And they have like different variations, El Hijo de Rey Mysterio, Rey Mysterio Dos. And what they do is, you know, these shady promoters, they'll put, you know, Hijo de in like really small letters and in huge letters, you know, Rey Mysterio. You know, and they go, oh, no, that's Rey, you know. And when they go in there and they see these guys that don't have the ability of Rey, or, and they know it's not his body type, they get pissed off. But the wrestler should also say something. But, you know, they're complicit in this, you know, because they know what the promoter's doing. And they should say, hey, you know what, I want to be my own guy. Put Hijo de Rey Mysterio in big letters, not Rey Mysterio Jr., whatever. Don't confuse the fans. Yeah. But they do it because they know that. But, you know, you're only hurting yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And something like that happened to you not too long ago, right? Someone tried to take the Conan name down in Mexico.
Yeah, bro. They've had so many guys. Conan 2000, Conan Big,
Conan
Super
Big.
Conan. They even had a Conan Gay. It was incredible.
Wow. Yeah, I actually seen a video clip. I want to say it was like some talk show or some. It was like you guys were being interviewed and Conan Big came out. And he was, I don't know what his deal was, but I was just tripping that he even had the, you know, the nerve to even be in front of you, you know, and do that. How did that work with you?
Yeah, well, when I was in WCW, a guy from Monterrey, His name is Carlos Elizondo. He's a promoter. He gave the name to some guy called Conan, and he named him Conan Big, you know, without getting my permission or anything. And I never, you know, I never really fought it because I knew he was the same thing that happened to Psicosis and the same thing that happened to all these Rey Mysterios or the same thing that happens when anybody tries to unscrupulously use a name. The fans take care of it on their own. I'm not going to go and litigate and get the lawyers rich and they drag the thing out like they do in Mexico. The fans know he has nothing to do with me, you know, and he, you know, Conan Big. And so, you know, he's had to live with that, but he's become very famous in Monterrey, which is like the third largest city in Mexico. Very famous because he's on this station called Multimedios, and he always goes in there and he's always doing really scandalous, embarrassing stuff. But there's that, you know, low IQ audience that loves, you know, that type of scandalous stuff that he does. You know, he'll denigrate himself. He'll do anything. You know, he'll do like really shit that to me is beyond me, you know, to get on TV. You know, he's like a TV whore. Yeah. And so, you know, he's fought like a guy that's 80 years old. Give me a break. He's fought like women and, you know, like artists, you know, like Nurka and all sorts of people. And a lot of people go and see it just because of El Morbo. You know, it's like when you're passing an accident on the highway and you're like, wow, you know, and you kind of stop to see. And so people are like, wow, what would happen if he fights this 80-year-old guy, you know? And he's kind of made a mockery out of what I've, you know, you know, what I've really put so much work into. But, you know, the people know who's who. You know, and that TV show, which was a Chavana show, the highest rated show in Monterrey, was just me confronting him about using my name. And he really got dressed down in that interview. It's actually very funny. Yeah, People should check it out.
Yeah, I did. I did see that, man. And I was like, dude, what? I just thought it was comedy, but I was like, dude, Conan will strangle this guy right now. And he doesn't even, he seems just like a joke on my end, but you know, hey, some people, live for that. But, you know, taking it back even to Mexico, man, in the old school days, you had a lot of beef with Vampiro back in the day, and you guys had like this ongoing beef, and you know, to the public, it was like real beef. But then now you guys appear together on Lucha Underground. How did that work out with you guys? Right. Was there still any kind of bad blood?
The thing with me and him is like when we were both in Mexico, wrestling was like at its apex of popularity since maybe like the 1950s. I mean, it was real, real big. And Vampiro was like the biggest foreign star. He's from Canada. Now he's a big foreign star, you know. And there was a lot of professional and personal jealousy between both of us. You know, he's way different than I am. He grew up as a punk rocker in Canada somewhere. You know, I grew up how I grew up. And just complete opposites. And, you know, we probably both had big egos at the time. We probably did, and we did. And we just didn't get along. And when AAA started, I was the biggest star in AAA, and he was the biggest star in Arena Mexico, which is our competition. And we just never saw eye to eye. And he's very outspoken, and so am I. So we were always trashing each other in the press, you know. But, you know, we kind of, like, when we were in Lucha Underground, we squashed it, you know. You know, you ain't going to catch us singing together at a karaoke club anytime soon. You know, he's still a whole different cat, you know, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. He walks to the beat of his own drummer.
Yeah, yeah. But now, you know, taking it to knowing, like, you know, you have these decades in you're a wrestling legend, and you've been around other legends, just even, you know, like what you mentioned, just being around Paul Heyman and all these guys that are geniuses in your industry. What would you say has been some of the best advice that you've received from any of these guys?
You know, I can't remember right off the top of my head any advice that they've told me that I live by. I just know that I would just look at their work ethic, whether it was, you know, Paul Heyman or Antonio Pena, Eddie Guerrero, who to me was like a mentor, Chris Benoit, God rest his soul. you know, the one thing, they had a work ethos that was second to none. You know, when I was in the gym, I was in there every single day. You know, I never missed a day. I was always in the wrestling ring trying to get better. I was always trying to come out with really cool outfits that nobody had. I spent a lot of money on my outfits. I wanted to be different, you know, and so my work ethic was like, no, there's like nobody like me, you know, and that's something I learned from all those guys. You just, to be the best, you know, you got to put your work in. You know, you can't be lazy. You can't, you know, lie on your laurels, you know, and, you know, it's almost like, what have you done for me lately? You know, you always got to be reinventing yourself, and you always got to be on top of your game. And those are some of the things that I took from them, you know, just, you know, that just real, real, you got to really be dedicated and hard work.
Yeah. And, you know, just even, you know, knowing the legends that you've been around, you've been in the ring with some of the greats like Benoit and Eddie and Pedro Aguayo, Macho Man, you know, you've done some stuff that some guys will never, ever do, but, you know,
right.
You know, rest in peace, all these guys, man. And is there anything that we can take away from you learning anything from any of these guys?
You know, man, look, at the end of it, I think what I've learned from them and what I've learned from myself is that if you want to find an excuse, you'll find one, you know, not to get shit done. You know, it's been proven from Obama being the first black president to, you know, who would have ever thought that there'd be a white rapper that outsold all the black rappers like Eminem, or there'd be a black golfer, you know, that would be better than all the white golfers like Tiger Woods. There's no excuses anymore, man. All the barriers have been broken. You know, yeah, racism still exists. We know that, you know. And there's a lot of things that are not just. That's just life. But you're not too fat. You're not too short. You're not too skinny. You're not too old, too young. Nothing. There's no reason why you can't get anything done. There's millions of examples of people that were labeled underdogs or they couldn't make it, and they made it through hard work and preservation. So if there's something that you really want, there's absolutely nothing that should stop you from attaining your goals.
Yeah, there you go, man. And I know you were also pretty close with Perrito. Is there anything, you know, I know you guys took a hard hit on that. You know, we're just coming up on the 1 year anniversary of his death. Is there anything from that moment that we can, kind of get the behind the scenes on?
Well, you know, Pedro was my best friend in the business after Rey Mysterio. You know, I had feuded with his dad for so many years. His dad took my mask. I took his dad's hair in a hair versus hair mask match. And I knew Perrito since he was a little boy, man. And I always told Perro, you know, his dad, I'll take care of your son. And unfortunately, that, you know, unfortunate night in Tijuana just about a year ago, you know, God had other plans. And just an incredibly magnetic, charismatic, caring, cool guy. He had a lot of money. People didn't know this because his dad had left him a lot of construction business. He had a lot of money, and he didn't need to wrestle. He wrestled because he loved it, and he loved to help people. And it was just very sad we lost somebody like him. You know, he's always in my heart, man, you know.
Yeah, and I know that took a toll on Ray, too, man. And, you know, a lot of people were showing support for what he was doing, and glad to see that he's back in, you know, Ray's back in action, and he's doing his thing. And are you kind of taking on the role of management or anything right now for him? Or
yeah, I help him. Yeah, I'm you know, I represent him, so I help him in all wrestling and non-wrestling activities right now. And you know, he's a guy that's in high demand because of A, of who he is, and B, because of the way he is, because he's a very thoughtful person, very fan friendly, very amicable.
Yeah, heck yeah. And real quick, I know, you know, there's a whole big thing with UFC just blowing up the way that is blowing up, and you know, you got guys like McGregor that are you know, grabbing the mic and showing these mic skills, kind of like, you know, like wrestling superstars, you know, And now you got CM Punk, who's announcing that he's about to you know, do his first fight over there at UFC. What's your thought on the whole UFC thing blowing up?
No, well, UFC is great because A, it's real. So people, you know, they're like, okay, we know that, you know, this isn't, you know, this isn't fixed beforehand. And, you know, it's, I think everybody, me as a kid, I always wondered, okay, who would win between a karate guy and a judo guy? Who would win between this guy and this guy? And, you know, in UFC, you get to see the different martial arts. And you know, it isn't really long because, you know, boxing can be boring because it's so many rounds, you know. And this is just like, you know, three rounds. If it's a championship match, it's five rounds. And, you know, they've done an incredible job of branding themselves. They've done an incredible job of making stars, you know, GSP, Nate Diaz, McGregor, Rousey, Brock Lesnar, you name it. You know, they've done a great job of that. And of course, you know, they've taken a page out of wrestling and boxing. And, you know, they do those really cool, you know, previews of the fighters before the fight and, you know, what they're doing leading up to the fight. And then you got guys that are charismatic and have great promo skills, you know, and they're getting people to come watch them. You know, when Ronda Rousey is telling Misha Tate, you're a do-nothing bitch, you know, and I'm going to whoop that ass, you know, women are like, hell yeah, you know, man, that's a kick-ass chick. I like her, you know, yeah. And then she's going out there and she's doing it. Then Holly Holm goes out there and she knocks her out. It's like, oh, shit, Holly Holm. And then Misha Tate comes and beat Holly Holm. So, oh, shit. So, you know, it's you know, it's really exciting. You know, they've done a really good job.
Yeah, it's like a novella over there. But what's your thoughts on CM Punk making his debut?
Yeah, I you know, CM Punk, respect to him, man, for getting into this. But I'm just a little afraid of the fact that, A, you know, unlike Brock Lesnar, who was a, you know, heavyweight champion wrestling in college, and he had wrestled in high school at the highest level, and he actually did a trial with the Minnesota Vikings and almost made it. You know, CM Punk doesn't have a judo, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu, an amateur wrestling or boxing background. So that's number one. And number two, you know, he's starting into the game pretty late, 36, 37 years old, with a lot of injuries. He just had, I think, back surgery from, you know, damage that was done in a wrestling ring. So, I mean, he's going in there already with a couple of liabilities, you know. Yeah. But, you know, he's like, okay, no matter, even though all that may be true, I'm still going to go in there and I'm going to do it, which goes back to the credo I said before. No matter what, if there's something you want to do, do it, you know, and he is doing it. So I got to give him, you know, shout him out for that, you know.
What was your thoughts when he made his just abrupt exit to WWE? What was your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, for the same thing that happened to Bryan Danielson happened to him. The fans wanted him. They wanted him to be the big star. WWE wouldn't listen. They wouldn't push him, you know. And then finally, when he did become a big star, you know, they didn't want him to get any bigger than Cena. And, you know, he wasn't easy to deal with either. He didn't like Hunter, you know, Triple H. Triple H didn't like him, you know, and problems arose backstage. And, you know, John Cena's like a company guy. He's always on there on time. He doesn't give any problem. CM's the type of guy that's going to tell you what he feels. But, you know, when CM Punk was going out there every week and throwing those pipe bombs, you know, getting on the mic and just saying stuff that nobody had ever said, that to me was riveting TV. He was incredible. And the people loved him. They were behind him, and his T-shirts were selling. He became a huge star. Yeah. But they never, you know, I think he wanted to, like, main event a WrestleMania, and they would never let him. You know, it's kind of funny because unlike other industries, if you're making money for the company, they're going to push you. In wrestling, even if you're making money, if the guys on top don't like you, you know, the guys that are behind the scenes, if they don't like you, if you have some sort of beef with them, you know, they can stall your career.
Yeah, there's a lot of politics back there.
Yeah, it's all mega politics, bro.
And would you say it's like that, and the same thing with boxing and UFC?
I don't think so, because I think that, like, I've seen, like, Dana had words with a whole bunch of fighters where they go back and forth, and he'll still put them in a fight and make money with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, in wrestling, like if somebody doesn't like you, you know, that that's in a position of power, they'll just hold you back. Can you imagine like a writer at, let's say, Modern Family, you know, No Le Cae Bien, este Sofia Vergara, and he's not gonna be able to write stuff to make her look stupid, you know?
Yeah.
That's your problem with her on a personal pit. But no, in wrestling, they'll take it out on you on TV. They'll put you in a skit where a girl beats you, or, you know, they berate you, they beat you week after week, you know, and they try to teach you a lesson, you know? And that, you know, what I love about wrestling, and I think all the wrestlers do, I love the boys, the other wrestlers. That's what we call each other, the boys and fans. But the in-between shit, the office, that's the worst part.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole politics going on behind the scenes that no one knows is, I think that's kind of what hurts the industry the most, you know? And I think, you know, there's a lot of fans that kind of, you know, that they know a lot of the stuff that's going on backstage, and they kind of wish some of the direction would go in another way. But, you know, now it's to me, I don't know, but, you know, you were saying it was how hard it was to get, become a wrestler back then. What has changed now with the way that one became a wrestler back then, with the way that someone gets in the industry now?
Well, back then you had a lot of veterans. When you go to a locker room today, you'll see a lot of young guys. When I came in, there were a lot of veterans, guys that had been in the business 10, 11 years before a major company would sign them. And so, you know, they were older guys, and, you know, they grew up in a different era. And so, you know, and back then, like, wrestling was still not really... A lot of people still kind of believed that it might be real, or that it, and the wrestlers treated it like that. Like if you were to go up to a wrestler and go, "Hey, is wrestling real?" He'd probably slap you, you know.
Yeah.
Now I'd just laugh.
Yeah.
You know, now I'd just laugh and go, "Yeah, well, yeah, no, it's fake," or whatever, you know, whatever mood he's in, but he's not going to get mad.
Yeah.
You know, but before a wrestler would get mad, it might be fucking punch you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, and I think that, you know, when Vince McMahon came out and said this is sports entertainment, which I don't think it's a sport. I just think it's entertainment, you know. And when he came out and he said that it was sports entertainment, so he could avoid a certain tax in New York. And then when you see shows like Tough Enough, which peels back, you know, a layer of, okay, how do they train? Because, you know, the wrestling is kind of like the circus. It's like, how do you get into the circus, you know, unless you maybe know somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And wrestling was the same way. You kind of had to know somebody to get in there, and he recommended you, you know? But now, you know, you can go to wrestling school, and, you know, it's easier to get in. And like I said, when you have shows like Tough Enough, and people see, you know, what it takes to be a wrestler, and they're like, wow, it ain't that easy, because it ain't. You know, it's an art form like anything else.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they always try to stick in football players and MMA guys and rappers and, you know, to go in there, and they always look like shit because, you know, it's an art. You have to learn it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go out there. And I'll just give you an example right off the top, Ruben. When you're in a match, you have to learn how to hit somebody so it looks real without hurting him. You got to learn how to when you get hit, how to sell so it looks like, you know, you've been injured. You got to remember stuff in your head because there are certain spots that are talked about before the match. You got to remember what are called false finishes. You know, when they go 1, 2, oh, and they break.
Yeah.
You know, that's a false finish. You got to remember the false finishes. You got to remember the finish. If there's somebody else involved in the match, maybe a valet, a manager, another wrestler, you got to remember that. If you got to hit somebody with a chair, how to hit them without hurting him. You know, if you're going to do a promo before or after the match, you got that in your head. You know, you got to learn how to work the crowd. You just can't be out there wrestling. You got to go out there and work the crowd and get them into a match. There's a way to get them into the match if you're a babyface, a good guy. And there's a way to get them into a match if you're a heel, which is a bad guy. There's a lot of stuff that you got to learn. So, and that takes years, like anything else.
Yeah. So it's would you say it's like a science to... to even just do a one night performance?
Yeah, it's like a science, like an art, and it's like, you know, it really is, you know, and it's like acting with sometimes comedy, with drama, with a little bit of everything, you know, put in into one. It's almost like a like an athletic, you know, play, if you will, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can get hurt and you can actually lose your life, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had two hip implants, triceps, shoulder surgery, kidneys. I mean, I've been, you know, Rey Mysterio's had 7 knee operations, a bicep operation. That's why when people go, is it fake? Well, if you think about it, stuntmen, at least they use pads and stuff like that. Like when we go through a table, we go through a table. When you get hit with a ladder, you get hit with a ladder. When you get hit with a chair, you get hit with a chair. When you bleed, you bleed. There's no such thing as a blood capsule, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, so it's a very brutal sport. And then you're, you know, you're traveling every night, 300 miles, 200 miles, looking for a hotel, looking for somewhere to eat. Then you sleep a few hours and you got to get up and look for a gym. Then you got to find the arena. And then, you know, it's just, it's a lot of stuff. It's a real grueling thing. And that, and that's what I was trying to get back to when you asked me about Rey Mysterio, the way they treated him. You know, Rey Mysterio has a lot of mileage on him. And if WWE is smart, and I can't believe they've never done this, they'd get guys that have been in the business over 15 years or if they're over 40 years old, and they should give them a reduced schedule. But, you know, they want these old cats, you know, to go out there on the road like they're 20 years old, all hurt and broken up, and they can't do it anymore. And they're missing out on business, because you could bring in a Kevin Nash or Scott Hall or a Goldberg or whoever you want to mention for, you know, 3 or 4 months. They do a program with somebody. They leave for like 6 months, they come back for 3 months, they're fresh, you know, but they want them to be on the road the whole year, and these guys can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's why Rey was always hurt, you know?
Yeah. Do you think Rey will come back under one of those kind of contracts, like The Rock or like Brock Lesnar, one of these guys?
I think so. Everybody always ends up coming back to WWE. I mean, I can't think of anybody that's never come back. They always come back eventually, whether it's for one last, what they call a run, or for the Hall of Fame. But Rey will be back, you know, in some, whether it's a short run to finalize his career, which is where he should end it up, yeah, or if not, for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you've always been one of the pioneers to do pretty much be the first of everything, you know, when it came to what you're doing and just the industry period, you know, but, you've also collaborated with some of the, you know, you brought up earlier, bringing in some of the rap guys. I remember you guys brought in like Master P and Cash Money and all these guys. Like every time you were in another city, you would always bring out these hip hop groups. What was your thought process on that?
I just showing love to the hip hop groups, you know, and so we'd always shout them out, or we'd bring them out with us. And, but we worked with Master P, which at that money, he was like, at that time, he was like the hottest thing in music, you know, the No Limit Squad, and they had Mystikal and, you know, the No Limit Soldiers. And, you know, we did this angle, but, you know, the writers were all white, you know, they were all from the South, you know, and they messed the whole thing up. And they did a scene in Georgia, like redneck part of Georgia. They did this thing where, like, you know, the No Limit Soldiers back then, they used to dress up in camouflage.
Yeah.
You know, Master P, he's not a studio gangster. Like, he's really from the hood, you know, whatever ward it is in New Orleans. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so he had like real guys from the hood with him at all time. You know, they straight up represented.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they did this thing where they were dressed up in military fatigues. And it was like 8 of them beating up on like these three rednecks, you know. And so, of course, visually, you know, it looked like a mob scene. Like, oh, look at all these black guys, you know, beating up on these white guys. And they tried to turn the crowd against us because we were the good guys in this storyline. And they turned it so we would come out looking like the bad guys in a very subtly racially tinged thing, you know. And, you know, it was, like I said, it was very hard because these guys didn't listen to rap music. They were older guys that listened to, like, Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash, y Mamadas Así, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they weren't into, because I remember one time me, I don't know if you remember back then, he used to come out and he used to go, hey, he used to say, hoo-dee-hoo. Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I remember one time me and Ray had these No Limit fatigues on, and we came out and we're like, hoo-dee-hoo. And all this, and when we came back, you know, one of the guys was like, what's that jungle bunny sound you're making?
Oh, wow.
And I go, nah, you know, and I was like, really, dude? And, you know, and that's what you had to work with, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's crazy because, you know, you're saying how there's, you know, a lot of the white guys, you know, riding and being a part of the whole action behind the scenes. I remember being in El Paso with Eddie Guerrero and LWO, and we're filming the scene where we had like the lowriders and we had like the whole LWO crew, and one of the guys from WCW came out and he actually told Eddie, he said, Eddie, you got to be more Latino. And Eddie just kind of stopped.
On.
Dude, we stopped the cameras, everything. Eddie just stopped and he just like went and pulled the dude aside and just kind of let him have it. But that's the kind of stuff that you guys were dealing with, you know, in WCW. And I can't even imagine what the LWO guys dealt with.
Yeah, bro, they wanted me to do this character like Ricky Ricardo. You remember I Love Lucy?
Yeah, yeah.
And so here I was, they wanted me to go from a guy that was one week was going, órale, arriba la raza, we bout it and all this shit. And next thing, you know, they wanted me to come in and go, oh, that's so ridiculous. And I go, bro, there's absolutely no way I'm going from that character to that character. That's like career assassination. Well, you know, and they tried to like massage my ego. They were like, well, if anybody can do it, you can do it. You know, it'll show versatility and it'll show depth. And I go, I ain't going to show shit. I'm not going to do that character, bro. Because that's what they wanted. You know, they wanted that over the top. You know, they wanted me to be more like, you know, Cheech and Chong. And I was like, nah, dude, you know, that's not what I'm portraying. If I want to do Cheech and Chong, I would do that. That's not what I'm portraying.
And the character that you came out with the Pendleton and your sagging and the bandana, that was all you, right? That wasn't them.
No, that was all me, bro. No, man, they had no idea what I was saying, what I was doing. You know, they had absolutely no idea, bro. They just know that, if you remember, you were there. The very first video we did was on a very low budget, you know?
Yeah.
And it was very ghetto, but I loved it. And then it got popular. You know, I was getting popular. And so if you remember, the second video, they spent a lot more money on, and we had, you know, we had bombs and we had everything. We had the zoot suits,
the Charger,
you know,
girls,
everything. You know,
And we shot it on film.
You know,
it was another level. And I remember even showing up to some of the arenas too, and I would see the dudes rocking the bandanas with the red Pendleton, and you kind of, you know, set the tone for all that, man. And what was your role, if any, in LWO?
My role was absolutely none. I was originally supposed to be the leader of LWO, but when they brought me to the Wolf Pack, they were like, okay, we'll give it to Eddie. And Eddie, who really up to then hadn't done anything that noteworthy, and mostly because they didn't let him, he really took that role and he owned it. And he was incredible. And that was like the first time you could finally see Eddie as an entertainer.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, Eddie, you learn, because he was that mentality of, I'm the best wrestler, and that's what I do, I wrestle, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he really learned the entertainment, I think, a lot from his partner, Love Machine, who's really charismatic. He was a wrestler's son also from Oregon. He was way over the top, you know, and then I came in, and of course, I was way over the top too. And, you know, he really started to get that entertainment, I think, more from him than from me. And, you know, he really shone on that LWO chance that they gave him.
Yeah. And what do you think changed with Eddie, when he made the transition over to WWE?
Well, I think when he went over there and they finally, you know, the maturization of him as an entertainer, as a wrestler, He became the total package. I mean, his interviews were great. That used to be the worst thing. Eddie's one of the very few guys I've ever seen go from being a bad interview to the best interview. He was incredible. And he had actually gotten his, when he was a heel in a bad guy in WWE, he actually got, remember that guy that used to play, and I forgot which of the two movies is, if it's American Me or Blood In, Blood Out, the guy that played Pop Popeye's.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, remember that guy?
Yeah.
That he was like a real scumbag.
Yeah, yeah. Give me some chon chon.
And he was like, yeah, watch that. Huh? Yeah, that guy. Yeah, that guy. Give me some chon chon. So Eddie had actually patterned himself after that guy. And, you know, he was a very hateable guy in the movie, you know. Yeah. And so Eddie actually studied him. And he said, that's the guy. I go, bro, I go, how did you take this to the next level? He goes, I studied that guy. And I just, you know, kind of took some of his traits. And, you know, and he just became their best all-around performer. He was already the best wrestler. And then he became their best entertainer. Now he was a complete package.
Yeah. Wow. Man. You got the stories, man. So, working with all these legends, and you've been like kind of training some of these new guys. Who's the next guy to look out for? Because, you know, you had Ricochet, Prince Puma, you know, that you're training on Lucha Underground. But now there's some other guys that are coming up. You know, who do
yeah,
we look
out for? Yeah, I recommended Prince Puma. Yeah, Brian Cage, Willie Mack, Killshot, all those guys. Taya, but I think the ones that I'm most proud of right now, obviously Taya is one of them, is Pentagon and Phoenix. You know, those were two guys that I met when they very first started, you know, and I helped them, you know, in everything. And from their music that they come out to helping them when they're in ring work, helping them in their promos, just, you know, Pentagon's probably the most popular wrestler right now in Mexico. So, and that's a guy that I discovered when absolutely nobody knew who he was. But Jack Evans is another guy. Angelico's another guy. Those are some of the guys that I've helped them a lot, I think, in their career.
And for someone wanting to get in the industry, you know, some of these independent guys, what advice you got for them that, you know, maybe, I don't know if you're mentoring any guys or just somebody that wants to get in that would like to reach out to you.
Yeah. Well, I'm on Twitter at, Conan5150. And I think, you know, the main thing is, like I said before, put in your work, you know, and, soak in as much as you can, watch as many DVDs as you can, do as many matches as you can, and try to just keep your mouth shut and listen, bro. Get under the learning tree. Anytime a veteran comes to one of your indie shows, go over there, ask him questions, pick his brain. Is there somebody that you like their style? Pick their brain, learn from them. Go out there, practice, you know. It takes a while to get good at this. It really does. But the main thing is you're gonna suffer. You're not gonna make a lot of money. There's gonna be a lot of broken promises. There's gonna be haters. That's just part of the game, bro. You know, yeah. You just gotta walk through all of that and know that that's just part of the game. For you to get to where you gotta go, there's a lot of competition, you know, and a lot of politics. But, you know, if this is what you want to do, those are some of the things you have to look out for. It doesn't sound too, you know, glorious right now. But, you know, when you go the Lucha Underground or WWE or, you know, wherever you go, NXT, and you sign your very first contract and you're making that money and you're getting royalty checks, you'll be like, you know what, it was worth it. And you should start from the bottom, and it makes you appreciate more what you had to fight for.
Do you think, you think it's easier for wrestlers to make it to, you know, the so-called big leagues now that there's NXT?
Way easier. Oh, yeah, way easier. Way easier. Mm-hmm. Way easier, but at the same time, there's more competition. There's more wrestlers, I think, now than there's ever been, because like I said, the veil's been pulled back. And now, before, they didn't give chances to guys that were small, like Rey Mysterio. Now small guys have a chance. So you have those guys in here now too. And I think you're starting to see a changing of the guard. You know, those big guys, 6 feet eight, 7 feet, that people used to be like, oh God, you know, that don't do anything. And, you know, and they, you know, and they look like clay figures, like claymation or something, wrestling next to these, you know, these other quick guys. I just think you're seeing a changing of the guard, and you're going to see the smaller, lighter, more quicker wrestling, a lot of it lucha influenced, just like you're seeing in UFC and boxing, whether it's Canelo Alvarez or Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao or Conor McGregor. You know, those are the guys making the big money right now, those lighter weights, because they're more exciting.
And you know, for you know, from the outside looking in, you know, you think that it's usually like someone like Triple H that's kind of being the talent scout, looking for these guys and finding these guys and putting them in NXT. What is it that some of these indies should be doing or be looking out for to catch the attention of some of these scouts?
Well, you need to go out there and start making a name for yourself and start making as many, you know, start getting, like, I know Evolve is a wrestling organization out of Florida, and they actually, people go to them and they kind of hone them and WWE looks for talent there. You got to make a name for yourself, like going to the PWG over here in Reseda, California, and going out there, making a name for yourself. Now you got to go on the indie scene, make a name for yourself, get a buzz, you know, and promoters will start asking for you. Fans will start asking for you, and you create a buzz about yourself, you know, start sending out your videos, the TNA and WWE, so they can take a look at you. And you got to create a buzz about yourself, or somebody's got to recommend you.
Yeah. And a while back you did some tryouts, right? Or something like that for AAA. Right. How does that work?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, we just didn't try out him. We just, you know, I think on the Kevin Kleinrock, who I think you had on your show, right?
Yeah.
Kevin Kleinrock over there at a Mass Republic. Shout out to Kevin and his partner at Mass Republic that they make Ruben Police Scanner Zamora. those guys, they make all these wrestling T-shirts and wrestling masks and stuff like that. You know, they put it down. Yeah. For Lucha Libre, you know, he kind of put it out there like on social media and called wrestlers, and he said, hey, they're having a trial for AAA. And that's actually where I discovered Brian Cage, you know, and also a girl who isn't wrestling for us now, but I know she's still in the business, called Christina Vanieri. And, you know, and then I did another one not too long ago, maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, in San Francisco, San Jose. And there I discovered Jeff Cobb, who's Matanzas for
Lucha Underground.
For Lucha Underground and Willie Mack, which is Willie Mack. And this other guy that his name is Vincent Mazzaro or something like that. He has like a panda gimmick, which is really cool. And so I know he's been wrestling on on dark matches in Lucha Underground. But, you know, you go to these tryouts and you see people that have potential, you know, and you think, okay, this guy's 6 months off. This guy, if he keeps training for another year, the way he's going, the way he's progressing, I can see his attitude. I can see his work ethic. He could be somebody. So you try to help those guys. You know, I always help anybody. But, you know, the guys that think that everything, oh, well, I've been in the business 2 years and how come this and that? I go, that's it. You've been in the business 2 years and you're expecting what? You know, you still haven't learned anything. You know, you still got a ways to go. So, you know, you got to go out there and you just got to, there's a lot of competition right now. A lot of good guys out there, a lot. There's a lot of competition out there. So you got to have a gimmick. You got to have something that makes you stand apart. You know, yeah. And go out there and start hitting all these promotions that, you know, everybody, you know, kind of like the Vanguard promotions, whether it's, like I said, PWG or Ring of Honor or, you know, stuff like that, and start making a name for yourself.
But, you know, you got guys like Brian Cage that have the look, they have the it, and he's got the in-ring skills. Why would someone like him not be picked up by WWE?
because they have a wellness policy. And does he look like he could pass that?
That's true. That's true. All right. We'll leave it at that, huh?
Yep.
Well, how is for some of these, you know, again, some of the legends that you've worked with, how is life after wrestling for some of these guys?
Well, a lot of them don't know how to assimilate, you know, life, and a lot of them didn't save their money, or they get into, you know, into vices, and it's pretty sad. And then some of them, you know, they make the transition and they get into another business, and they're successful. So you have a little bit of everything, but I just think that wrestling companies, I think, owe it to the wrestlers, since they don't pay them a pension, and they use them and they abuse them, and then they throw them away when they're no good. I think they have like a moral obligation to at least use them in some capacity in the wrestling business if they don't have any skills to do anything else. And a lot of times they don't. And then the wrestler doesn't have any coping mechanisms. He doesn't know what to do. And that's when you start having you start seeing some of the sad stories we've seen with some wrestlers.
Yeah. And I want to say it was AAA that recently started to do like some kind of healthcare, some kind of health insurance for some of the wrestlers.
Yeah. But it was very, I don't know, man. I don't know if it was more publicity than anything, because I haven't really seen anybody take advantage of that. So they haven't done it on a wide, comprehensive scale. Nobody has yet. Hopefully I'll be able to do that in the future.
Nice. And so what can we expect from Conan here in the near future?
Well, you know, for a while I was working with, and I hope to be back with them in the summer. It's on this channel called NBC Universal, which is a Spanish version of NBC, with a commentator for Combates America, which was an MMA group with mostly Hispanic fighters. So I hope to be back with them by the summer. And then I have my podcast on MLWradio.com, where we talk about everything from wrestling to politics, to movies, to current events, to everything. Believe me, it's not like your normal wrestling podcast. As a matter of fact, I just got a call from a really good friend of mine called Chris Jericho. He's on Podcast One, yeah, which is like a huge podcast company. They have like Jim Ross, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I've been trying to get on there for the longest, because I have a lot of, you know, I have free shows, and then I have shows that you have to subscribe to.
Yeah.
And I've been at this 4 years, and I've kind of had my own little fan base. And Chris Jericho, I might be doing something with him in Podcast One very soon. So I'm very excited about that.
Nice.
Like I said, I have my own podcast. Is this going to come out before WrestleMania or no?
I'm going to try to get it out ASAP. So yeah, hopefully.
Okay. Well, if it doesn't, you can edit this part. So we're going to be in during WrestleMania weekend on the 31st of March. Last year we had our first one. It was called Wally Mania 1. This year is Wally Mania 2. Last year we had Rey Mysterio, Scott Hall, Kevin Sullivan, MVP, Samoa Joe, and then Wale, you know, the rapper.
Yeah.
He loves wrestling, and so then he had a concert right after it. It was really dope. I'd never really heard Wale's music. It was really dope. He really thinks outside of the box, and he brought a lot of hip-hop heads. This year we're going to have Jimmy Iovine's son. He's going to be a DJ. He's going to be there, and then we're going to have some of the Lucha Underground stars, Pentagon, Taya, Jack, Phoenix, signing autographs, and we're going to have a whole bunch of surprises. So if you want to come out and check us out on Wally Mania 2 in Dallas, you know, just there's information on the MLW.com website, or you can go to MLWradio.com, where we have our podcast, and we're doing daily updates, or even on my Twitter feed.
Nice. So are you, where else can someone find you? You doing Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, any of that?
Yeah, I just do Twitter, Conan5150, Facebook, which is Carlos Espada. That's about it, man. I don't have a lot of time to be doing any more than that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You can we be looking for any movies starring Conan anytime soon?
They wanted to do a movie with Rey Mysterio, Mexico, which we're still mulling, and I would have a part in that because it's part of his life. It's a movie that is really they're going to invest a lot of money in, and they're going to bring in some cool choreographers. Like we have one or two guys. One guy with what was that movie called? Flying Tiger, Crouching Dragon. He was the choreographer for that. There's another one that's been the choreographer for Jet Li movies. And so that's just something that we're still in the embryonic stages. But like I said, if it comes to fruition, you'll be the first to know.
Nice. And yeah, wasn't there some rumors a while back about you know Robert Rodriguez wanted to do a couple movies with Ray, with you guys?
Yeah, I think they want to do a movie like a Marvel type movie, which would would actually be very smart with the Lucha Underground characters.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're hoping to do in the future. Yeah.
Nice. Well, cool, man. I appreciate your time, man. I know I just wanted to do a couple minutes with you, and here I was yapping your ear off, man. But I appreciate your time, man. Hopefully we can come back and do an update with everything we've caught up on. But, man, I appreciate you, man.
Nah, bro, you're a friend, bro. You do stuff for orphanages on the other side of the border, man. You're into the music scene. You know, you're into activism, to La Raza and all that, which, you know, as you know, I'm very pro-Latino. And so much respect to you for what you do, man. And, I'm always here in the cut, whatever you need.
No, man, I appreciate that. Whether you guys have it, man, we will be catching up with Conan soon. Make sure you follow him. He's doing a lot of stuff. True pioneer, lucha libre legend, wrestling legend all the way around. And we appreciate him, man. Thank you guys for tuning in as long as you have. And there you go. Connected with Ruben Torres, connected with Conan, doing it. And we out of here. Get connected. Be connected with Ruben. Connected. Yo, if you C-O-N-E-C-T-A-D-O, you already know about the show, so let's go. It's your music and lifestyle, fashion profile, the entertainment source for everything you want to know about. North to the south, the east to the west side, stay connected with Ruben Torres worldwide, so let's go. Across the globe, well respected, beasting on the industry. Connected.